Hey, it's Jacob Goldstein from Business History. In our new series, American Genius, we tell the stories of three great writers who changed the way business works in America. Our first episode is about Benjamin Franklin, who, among many other things, was a best-selling business writer. Take a listen.
He's writing this much later in his life, consciously creating this image of himself. And I do want to emphasize how unusual this model is at the time, this self-made man myth, because you don't want to be self-made. It's low class to be self-made. You know, this idea that we have today is the opposite, right? And it comes from Franklin. Today, there is the derisive term nepo baby.
Well, exactly right. And these days, if you are a billionaire, you had better have a Benjamin Franklin story about starting in a garage, coming up with the idea from nothing.
And here is Benjamin Franklin inventing it right before our eyes.
This has been brought to you by Odoo. To listen to more of our American Genius series, listen to Business History. New episodes release every Wednesday on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yep, he's planning another project. So this Father's Day at Lowe's, tap into free gifts for dad. Get a free select Craftsman power tool when you buy a Craftsman V20 charger with 2 amp hour and 4 amp hour batteries. Plus, get a free DeWalt power tool when you buy a select 20-volt max XR 4 amp hour battery kit. Dad knows our best lineup is here at Lowe's. Valid through 7/14 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Welcome to part two of our conversation with Peter James Dowling about demonic control. You were talking earlier about how some of these things are affecting children. Obviously, Ouija boards have been around for quite some time. Many things have been around for quite some time. But let's talk more modern day. What are some of the things that you found that you believe are demonic, that are attempting to lure children in, and what is the end effect of that with whatever they are using?
Okay, I'm glad that you asked that question. This is what I've been working on in my spare time, and I've been noticing that there's a lot of subliminal horror. Remember you asked me if you believe that subliminal messaging, is that done intentionally? Mm-hmm. And I said maybe a little bit of both, but I did some research since our last interview, and my last interview with you, and I have to believe that the majority is purposely put in these children programs. The reason is, and a lot of parent reviews have says, oh my goodness, I can't believe that my kids are doing this. And, you know, I just know as a parent, I have two boys of my own. I will not, you know, at a certain age, and I had to wait till they were 19 years old before I told them. I kept my paranormal investigating and my demonology away from them. Mm-hmm. I'm very protecting of my children. They come first. You know, as any parent would, you protect them, and you want them to have a better life and everything, and you don't want to do anything to traumatize them. But there are so many parents out there that have children that just are irresponsible. And unfortunately, there are so many video games out there and TV shows that are demonic in nature. Not only do they use demonic names and what have you, but they're being subjected by the demonic by these video games. For instance, Goat Simulator, it's approved for all ages, and there's no age restriction whatsoever to these. And in this game, they're killing people and animals to use as a sacrifice you know, for a demon or a pentagram.
Mm-hmm.
And this, these games, Melody has seen as a teacher's aid. And I'm not going to say who or where,
mm-hmm.
okay? But these children are 7 years old and they're doing this. When I was 7 years old, okay, my parents had full control of what I could see and what have you, except when it came to the ghosts. I kind of did that on my own because I wanted to have the knowledge. But it was traumatizing because my children, I know that as children, their brains aren't fully developed until they're about, what, 17, 18 years old?
Mm-hmm.
And this is traumatizing for them. Or they'll think, the parents say, oh, it's just a game. Well, I remember my parents telling me that the Ouija board was just a game. And look what happened. I summoned a demon. And, you know, and it's funny, but it's not funny.
I can't imagine anything sounding more innocent than Goat Simulator. And I know what you're talking about. Yeah. I think I've played it like once on my phone and then I just got rid of it because I didn't dive into it at all. All I had mm-hmm. seen on it in the 5 minutes that I had played it several years ago was it was a goat running around and just destroying things. I guess I'm completely unaware of any of its undertones that you're talking about.
Yes, and matter of fact, a lot of parent reviews have talked about this and brought it to my attention.
Wow.
And, you know, for whatever reason, they know, you know, I'm a demonologist
yeah.
and I'm looking at this. But, you know, you have given me a platform to warn people about the hidden dangers of the paranormal, the dangers of ghost hunting,
yeah.
and as well as the demonology side, which I don't like to always talk about. But, you know, it's good because the way to defeat the enemy is knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd rather tell people these things, okay, as to put them, you know, put what I said in the back of their minds. You don't have to believe anything that I say, but just put it in the back of your mind, and if something happens and you see it and say, oh, yeah, I remember the guy on Tony Bruschi's show, I remember some guy said something about that, and then they'll know. You know, just put it there. And then you got Five Nights of Freddy, which is a TV series, and then it became a video game. And it's meant to psychologically give children nightmares.
Mm-hmm.
And it does. There's children scared of that, but
sure.
the parents think it's okay.
What is the danger in something like that? I mean, it's a scary game. I don't play mm-hmm. it, but I know what you're talking about. It's a scary game. Essentially, you're a character that is exploring essentially a shut down Chuck E. Cheese, for lack of a better term.
You nailed it.
And the animals or the characters kind of come to life in the dark, and it's scary and it is spooky. And I get it's a lure because it's what you're taking, which should be fun and exciting and happy and joyful, and turning a real dark spin on it. Is the danger in the game itself, or is the danger in the mindset that it puts people in who play it and the fear that these sort of things would put towards somebody? And if that's the case, wouldn't anything that is scary or that puts you into that kind of a fearful mindset have potential danger to it?
Both.
Okay.
Both. And it does. And you know, it traumatizes the child, or the other aspect of it, it was purposely done in a way to traumatize or to scare. And even adults like to be scared. I mean, that's why a lot of people, sometimes they ghost hunt. They mm-hmm. want to get scared. They get a thrill out of it. You know, but then again, they don't know the dangers of it. Now, with a child is innocent. A child, some are maybe very few are strong, but most of them are weak. They're vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
And after a while, what happens is they start, being scared and being vulnerable, and the demonic like to prey on that. They like to prey on the vulnerable. They like to prey on people who are hurting. They are, anytime people are depressed, anything negative, they love to do that because emotion is energy. And if I go into a cemetery or a haunted location and, you know, I am not spiritually sound and I'm letting emotions bother me, I'm basically a receptacle where people are these entities will be attracted to my anger, my frustration, all the negative emotions. They feed off of that. And a lot of times people have these things. They'll go into a home that's not haunted. And they'll go in, they'll either have a physical injury or they'll have a big argument and fight and emotions happen or something tragic happens in that home. It'll bring out things that were hidden in these homes, you know. And what happens after that, they have a full-fledged haunting on their hands. So it lays dormant. There's a thing called dormant hauntings. All right. Mm-hmm. So that happens. And these kids, you know, the demonic will play on a child, and they will. And, you know, people make these games, and some parents, you know, they think it's hysterical, you know, and it's just a game and everything. And they think it's funny. And, you know, the only thing that I know that laughs of another person's tragedy is demonic.
Sure.
And especially when it comes to hurt children that are frightened and scared. I don't think it's funny at all, personally.
Does it come down to, because you can have many children playing these games and a large percentage have absolutely nothing happened to them, you know, overtly that we can say, well, this was, you know, something happened or something was conjured up. But then you can say that, well, what is going on here, you know, to a smaller percentage? Why is it that it's only certain ones that will seem to have more of a negative effect or some sort of demonic outcome that actually manifests itself, while others, it literally just remains something on a screen? Does it have to do with that child, with their psychological state, with their emotional intelligence and strength against things like this? Or what does it have to do with?
It does, with the emotional strength, the spiritual strength, everything. Because every child is different, just like every human being is different.
Sure.
And it also, too, you know, we don't know these homes, if they do have a ghost. Some are people say, oh, it's okay, we have a ghost, I'm okay with it, I can live with it. I never seen anybody that was happy to live with a demonic entity. That's
funny, yeah.
No. But the thing is, it's like playing these movies. Like, say, if I kept playing horror movies as an adult over and over and over, okay? Or these, it can lead to infestation. It can, or an attachment. It can. Is it guaranteed? No. So it's not going to always affect somebody. Like a lot of times when I watch the Conjuring series or anything that's based on a true story, like The Entity or anything like that, Poltergeist or The Exorcist, or The Rite. I can just keep on going. I basically say a little prayer before I watch it and ask for protection. Okay. And so far I have been protected. But I view these things and say, okay, I can relate to this. Well,
sure.
That's Hollywood. Well, you know, like my dad, when he went to World War, he survived World War II in Korea. And, he used to sit back, and I remember as a little kid, he used to watch these war movies and he just, laugh at them because he was there.
Sure.
You know? And, you know, so it's like that. Some people find it entertaining. They like to be scared. I do find them a little bit entertaining, but I look at it as, okay, these are experiences that people went So to me, it's educational study, and that's how I look at it. But I always pray for protection before I watch these things. And a lot of times I'll go over to people and say, hey, you know, this is true. I've experienced that before. Yeah, that's feasible. Well, that's actually true because I read that in, Ed and Lorraine Warren's book.
Yeah.
And I remember it being on the news when I was a kid. So, yeah, that's what I do. But it hasn't affected me, but I have seen people become personally haunted. And that's where it comes with these children and everything else. They can become personally haunted, and it'll affect their lives. And to me, I will not bring any child with me on an investigation until at least they're 19 years old or 21, okay? Mm-hmm. Because, you know, they're not mature enough yet. And they don't understand what you try to tell them sometimes because their brains aren't yet fully developed. But every child is different. Some are more mature than others, okay? But just to be safe, I don't want to expose children to this. Sure. And there's adults I don't want to expose some of the things that I've gone through.
Sure.
I don't want to expose it to them because it's dangerous.
Ultimately, when we're protecting someone from something, you know, it's we don't want them to be hurt. And certainly,
right.
Ultimately, we don't want someone to get killed by whatever we are trying to protect them from. This is kind of a broad based question, but I'd love to get your take on it. Are the demonic ever the cause of death for the living, yet the living end up just giving it other reasons because on a death certificate, you can't put down, you know, demon as death, as what did it. But I mean, essentially, you know, something that I'm not necessarily saying the demon picked up a butcher knife and slashed someone's neck. I'm more so saying it drove a person to suicide. It drove a person to, you know, be in a situation, wrong place, wrong time that killed them. Inadvertently, not suicide at all, but just they happened to be out there. They were driven to be standing by the road at a certain time and a bus veers off and hits them or whatever it may be that was non-intentional. But it was caused, in fact, by something that had other intent that is manipulated that person to be in that wrong place at that wrong time.
Yes, and I have a list of things. A matter of fact, I wrote a small page because I'm slowly writing a book about my experiences and also, you know, to teach people the dangers, the hidden dangers of paranormal investigations and demonology and what have you. I'll give you one name, for instance, Father Malachi Martin.
Mm-hmm.
He died mysteriously. But there's also, I don't know how people are connected to history, but there has been, and I remember hearing of such cases of people dying from fright. They found the body and they were in such a position that was horrific.
Mm-hmm.
People have, you know, people's necks, priests have died from doing this. Priests have also, but not only deaths that happen, the people have sold their souls to the devil and what have you, and have admitted that they've done that. They have paid for it. So I have written documentation and I did a write up on there, but I do have a list and eventually I'd like to be able to send that to you.
Sure.
But right offhand, Father Malachi Martin, The Exorcist was based on one of his experiences of a boy in Philadelphia that was possessed.
Mm-hmm.
And for many nights, they've been doing the exorcism. But he's been on such shows as Art Bell and what have you.
Sure.
And I did some research on him, and he mysteriously passed away. And also, a lot of times, the Catholic Church will cover of how a priest died. And yes, this does happen. People do die from this. And there have been times when I've been on an investigation and dealt with a demonic force where I thought that my life was in danger. It was just in the beginning before I crossed the line into demonology. I knew that I had to get I had to do something to protect myself. I had to do something to get knowledge in this field real quick, you know, and ask God for protection. And I had to be, I went to the Catholic Church, and I spoke to an exorcist, and he confirmed me as demonologist. So bye-bye just looking for ghosts.
Yeah. You had mentioned something, a term that we hear, you know, thrown out there. I sold my soul to the devil. And you know, it's used just in popular culture and just in, you know, in slang. But it's also something that people have literally tried, often out of desperation or need, that they think, okay, if the only option here to get what I want is to do that, is to make some sort of bargain where they pray, they speak out loud, they do something that essentially makes that bargain true, and then the intended consequence of what they're hoping for happens. However, the odds, as slim as they are, it somehow happens. Is there ever a way to reverse that deal once it's been made, if someone realizes, oh shit, I shouldn't have made that deal?
Basically, that's what I said when the entity showed up, when I played the Ouija board with Anne and Michael. Yeah, exactly. And yes, I know someone right now that this happened to.
Okay.
And when you make a deal, okay, they never come through. Or if they do, there's going to be a time where you have to pay up.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times they get scared. People say, what in the world did I do? Oh, you know what? Just like you said. And this person I met and I've been working with, and I said to this person that you can reverse it. You can reverse curses. You can reverse all this stuff. And I showed her how to do it. And yes, you can. Because a lot of times when they don't come through, it's null and void.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you change your life around and you notice you made a big mistake, what happens? They become spiritual. They become seeking God. They become wanting to know the mystical part of metaphysics, wanting to know metaphysics. And some become Christians. Some get into religion. They turn their lives around, and they know they made a big mistake. But, you know, that's one thing. From the other side, when it comes to angelic heaven and the God of love and God of patience and kind, they want you to pray. They want you to reach out to him, God. They want, you know, they want that. God wants that, all right? Where Lucifer wants to keep you into being selfish, self-centered, egotistical, not caring about fellow man, not helping other people, being into yourselves. If it feels good today, do it. That mentality.
Mm-hmm.
And once you're into that, once you're into me, 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 like a real bad narcissist, what happens is they kind of tend to leave you alone. And you just go on your daily life because you've already been fooled.
Yeah.
And then what is once you start saying, I'm uncomfortable, there's more to life than this. What is the meaning of life? And you start asking your questions on things, or I just don't like the way I feel about myself, and I want to go to a higher plane, a higher spiritual level, and I want to know God. That's when the attacks start happening.
Let me ask you about that for kind of a point you were making there.
Turn it.
I didn't mean to interrupt you, but you had mentioned something about, you know, a narcissist. When you encounter people like that, I mean, I've been shocked in my adult life at just the lengths, you know, having encountered narcissists and understanding more about them. I've read books, I've studied it. It's amazing what they're capable of. And it's scary.
Deception.
And it's scary too, because it's one of the most difficult, if not impossible, things in the field of psychology to ever cure or to ever correct. So I can see that from the perspective of something demonic or dark going, oh, we already got you. We're like, what? You're already on the path. You're already one of us. You're already doing whatever you want to do. We don't need to do anything with you because you're going down that way. Is someone who is, you know, just a malignant narcissist to such an extreme that is just out there 100% for themselves, it's nothing but lies, and that exists, and it is scary. Is that almost something where is that a form of possession? Is that a form of something like that where psychology can barely help you? They can identify what's going on, but that person, no matter what you do, you know, maybe one out of 100 will come around and go, I've been screwing up. I've really been looking at this the wrong way. But most will live their entire lives, end up isolating and alienating everyone out of it, and just kind of keep flowing through people like water. I mean, is that in itself the term when we're talking a serious diagnosable narcissist? Not just all of us have narcissistic traits, but just the hardcore ones. Is there something else going on there that lends itself into the world of something darker in control of that person?
It can, because usually people that are dark, they flee from the light. It's just like that. When you turn on in a dark room, you turn on the light, the darkness runs away. It disappears. It's the same, very similar to it. And there's a correlation between the two. I could say pretty much more, I'd be more into the attachment aspects of it, or the oppression part of demonic influences. Mm-hmm. Not fully a possession. Usually when I see a possession, it can be crafty, but it's knowing the unknowing is when you know that person is possessed or not.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the key things. Now, how in the world does this person speak in Latin when they never studied Latin before, or they speak German or Indian or whatever?
Sure.
And that, how did they know that language? Or that I had let's say I had a taco last week, or a burrito, and the person says, hey, last week you had a burrito. How did you know that when they're not even in my life? And they come and tell me things that there's no way of knowing. Just giving an example.
Yeah.
So when it comes to that, and we talked about this before, there's a fine line between psychology and actual possession. And usually when there's an exorcism going on, we have to have a psychiatrist or a medical doctor there. Usually when an exorcism is performed, we have to eliminate the psychological aspects of it. If they're on medication, and it has to be the exorcist will be in touch with the psychiatrist. And when they exhaust all remedies with counseling and medication and what have you, then many times, like I said, the parapsychology and the psychiatry, they kind of work together now more than they have been. And there have been reports of doctors saying, okay, let's try the exorcism. Nothing else is working. So then they'll go through an exorcism, and usually we have to, exorcists have to have an MD or a doctor or a psychiatrist there, not only to read vitals and what have you, but also the psychological aspects of it to see what's going on. And there has to be other people in the room, because there has been priests and there have been exorcisms where the priest, a fine example is Emily Rose, the possession of Emily Rose.
Sure.
With, you know, and as it, Father Martin actually went to jail, and his life was on the line because she died in his care when he was trying to perform the exorcism that failed. There have been other priests that have done exorcisms and the person wound up dying. It's very, very dangerous because these entities will kill for instead of you pushing them out. They will make that person suffer and other people suffer. And like I said, everybody in that room that's doing the possession, their life is at risk. So when you have a doctor, you have a psychiatrist, and you have another person, a layman or an assistant priest or somebody helping the priest, you have witnesses. And then you have two professional people. You have the medical and you have the psychiatrist. Okay, so if anything goes wrong, you know, because there's legal ramifications every time an exorcism is performed. Because if anything goes wrong, that person that's doing the exorcism, all right, can go to jail, go to prison. And not only that, okay, something can go wrong physically. So it's good to have a doctor or, you know, so, but not, everybody is at risk in that room. And, you know, and there have been known that people have been possessed themselves because the entity would, you can't cast there, you know, you can't cast an entity into a place in a pit of hell, go to hell. We don't have that power. No, what it does is goes to another person, another person, another place, and it bounces around. And, you know, there, Father Malachi Martin has often spoke about, and other priests that I've talked to, that they did one exorcism and then they'll run into the same entity later on with somebody else when they do another exorcism. You know, so sometimes an exorcism and sometimes a cleansing, a proper cleansing when I'm doing the deliverance inside a home. That could take days. Sometimes it can take weeks, you know, and it's very, very exhausting.
Sure. And sometimes it takes one and sometimes it takes a long period of time for that to ever remove itself. Is there ever cases where there just is no success no matter how much time is put into it? I mean, I know we talked about sometimes where people have died. Obviously, that didn't work. But where it just goes on, I mean, is there ever cases where even the church gives up and says, I don't think we can help anymore. I don't, without putting ourselves, without ourselves dying or putting ourselves at such a risk, because it's just going to go through us one by one and pick us off. Has there ever been a case that you're aware of where they just said, look, this is too far gone for us to be able to save this person?
Well, the ones that aren't called to do this, they have. And the thing is when somebody has been called by God and confirmed, either they become an exorcist and they are an exorcist, you don't leave that person behind and you're risking your own life. You're willing to sacrifice your own life to help somebody else. That's no greater thing to God, sacrifice. You're sacrificing yourself. And when I go into home to deliverance, I'm risking my life for that person. I'm willing to do so. You know, it's a love, the agape love of another person, which we need more of in this world. I really believe that. And, you know, it's like, you know, like two people, if we want to talk about it, you're like two people. They might have political differences, but they can look for things in common. And don't take it personal. And, you know, when one person loves mankind and knows the intentions like the other person, they can work together. They can find common ground. So it's the same thing with when you're dealing with working with another person. It's the same kind of love of a human being, the agape love, God of love of all things. And, you know, you want to help that person. You will do anything for that person. There have been people that have given up. There are also times where a person has been exorcised or a place have been delivered And it says in scriptures that, you know, an entity, or basically an entity, will see a house that's clean. They will leave. That one entity will be there. Sometimes there might be that just one entity, but most of the time there's more than one. But then they get cast out. That house is clean. That entity will peek and say, hey, that house is clean. Or that person, individual, you know, is back to doing their thing again. And not only will that entity want to return, but he's going to bring his friends. You know, so they all go in. And then there are times where you can clean a place out, and then first thing you know it, they can be brought back in again, because somebody did not want to stop playing with the Ouija board, or back to practicing occult practices, or something that brought it back in again. And the same thing, there's people who have been possessed, they've been successfully exorcised, but also too, you know, we're going to get back to that other thing, that a lot of times these demonic entities will fool you and try to make you believe that, you know, they're gone, and they're not, you know, mm-hmm. And there are signs for that. But when it comes to the exorcism part, a lot of times they'll play like, hey, we're gone, and they're not. But there's also times where there has been a successful exorcism or a deliverance, only to later on that person get back into negativity again and fall back in the same ways and then become possessed again. And it's usually 10 times worse the second time around. That's why a lot of times when I question somebody, they have to be sincere of quitting cult practices and doing whatever they're doing that invited the entity in. They have to, because if they don't, it'll come back and it'll be worse.
That wraps up the second half of our conversation with Peter James Dowling about demonic control. Big thank you to him for joining us once again for an in-depth conversation on the topic. Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for the support, and thanks for listening.